tonight, the topic is Kibud Avim. And it is somewhat connected to the parasha. Interestingly enough, it seems to come up twice in the parasha. Only one is really the focus that Chazal have. In the beginning of the parasha, Yaakov leaves. In this past week's parasha, he was instructed by his parents to go to Laban's house. Esav is trying to kill him. His parents also are very interested in him finding a wife. Yitzchak's motive seemed to be that Yaakov needs to leave home in order to find a wife. And Rivka is seemingly more concerned that Esav is going to kill Yaakov. Yitzchak may not have been aware of that. He may not have been told, and therefore that wasn't his motivation for sending Yaakov away. We're taught, if you do the math, the amount of years that Yaakov was away, so, you know, he was held accountable somewhat for delaying a brief amount of time, that he did not keep Kibud Avim appropriately, but for the amount of time that he was learning in the yeshiva of Shemin Aver, presumably under Aver, he was not punished for that time. And that's one time where we see the idea of Kibud Avim. Specifically, as Chazal tell us, the Talmud Torah is greater than Kibud Avim. So that's something we need to address. I think tonight, there are many facets of Kibud Avim. One could really give an entire series on it to go through the ins and outs. And we're not going to be able to comprehensively go through all the halachas of Kibud Avim in one sitting. But at least to touch upon the basic concept of what is this mitzvah, what is the general aspect of this mitzvah, what can we learn from this mitzvah in a general sense, and based on that, why is Talmud Torah greater than Kibud Avim? We find towards the end of this week's parasha something which is apparently overlooked and that needs the question needs to be asked: why? In the end of the parasha, Lavan and Yaakov make a treaty, and in the treaty, it seems to be indicated in the pasuk that they're going to swear, with the God of Avraham, and Lavan chose the God of Nahor, who is obviously not a holy God; it's an avodah zarah. And it says that Yaakov swore in pachad aviv Yitzchak, with in the fear instilled in him, meaning the deity, meaning Hashem himself, of his father Yitzchak. So even though initially the pasuk referenced it as Elokei Avraham, at the end of the pasuk it refers to it as Yitzchak. It's unclear. However, there's a similar pasuk at the towards the end of Vayigash, where Yaakov is heading to Mitzrayim, and he brings many karbanos on his way down to Mitzrayim. Just before he goes, he's very nervous that his relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu will be strained. Hashem has to come to him and say, "Al tira, Yaakov, don't be afraid." And Yaakov brings many karbanos, and in it says that he brought them to the God of his father, Yitzchak, his father. So there it's referenced as his father's God, and Rashi brings a memory from Chazal over there that we see that a person is chayiv in Kibud Avim more so to his father than to his grandfather, because it's referenced as Elokei Yitzchak as opposed to Elokei Avraham. Now, why is that not also seen in this week's parasha at the end? Hopefully, I'm not sure, with time constraints, for tonight, hopefully we'll be able to touch upon that. I can't say with certainty. If not, maybe we can talk about it another time. But that is another time where it would seem that the idea of Kibud Avim appears in our parasha, even if it's not outright expressed. So, Kibud Avim, what is it, essentially? The Gemara lists different things that one has to do for his father. He has to give him food and drink, and he has to prepare clothing for him, escort him, taking him in and out, taking him all over the place, and to do it with a smile, basically. It would seem the idea is to make sure that your father is taken care of. Now, there is a halacha that the son is only responsible in Kibud Avim with the money of the father, not with his own money. It's the father's money. So the son doesn't have to put money out, so to speak. However, he does have to make sure that his father's needs are taken care of, which could mean that at one point, you know, if the father doesn't have money, the son may to a degree have to then support the basic needs of the father, but he might not have to go begging. And that's something that's discussed. We're not really going to go into, you know, tonight. But the idea that seems to be expressed, the Chinuch says it outright, is there's a tremendous hakaras hatov that one needs to give to his parents. See, his parents firstly brought him into this world, so just the fact that he's alive physically, he needs to be thankful for the physical being in this world, if nothing else, and he owes it to his parents for that. Besides that, in most circumstances, his parents took care of him, certainly in his youth, maybe even when he got older. So for what they did while he was younger, you know, raising him, clothing him, feeding him, you know, whatever other luxuries that come standard almost in most, you know, in today's day and age, for that he has to be grateful, and therefore he has to take care of their needs. It seems that it's overall an idea of Hakaras HaTov. We see that both the Rambam and the Ramban, the Rambam in his Perush Mishnayos, the Peya, and the Ramban in his Perush Chumash, when discussing the Luchos, where Kibud Av V'Em can be found, say that it's more of a mitzvah bin Adam L'Chaveiro than it is bin Adam L'Makom. Even though it's clear, and we find expressed in many sources, that Kibud Av V'Em has in it, and instilled in it, an idea which is certainly bin Adam L'Makom, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our Father, and the Hakaras HaTov here is certainly very directly a representation of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us. He brought us into this world. He continues to sustain us and taking care of all our needs, not just when we're young, but throughout our entire life. Everything is dependent on Him. So the Father, who obviously not to the degree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, but is a physical entity that we can relate to, that seems to give us many of the same concepts in a physical sense that we understand, by doing this and by honoring that, one can appreciate more and honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Ramban, actually, although he does give more weight to it as being a mitzvah bin Adam L'Chaveiro, he sees in it the bridge, that this is the mitzvah of the Dibros that essentially connects bin Adam L'Makom and bin Adam L'Chaveiro. If the first five are primarily bin Adam L'Makom, and the second five are primarily bin Adam L'Chaveiro, so Kibud Av V'Em is a little bit in the wrong side here, being the fifth. It's really on the first set of Lucho. So he sees that the Ramban mentions that it really is out of place. It's not that it's a bin Adam L'Makom that's just about to bridge into bin Adam L'Chaveiro. It is primarily bin Adam L'Chaveiro, because you are really honoring your father directly. Indirectly, you're appreciating and honoring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's that that is the first, you know, so you're right, it is on the wrong side, but it's the segue into bin Adam L'Chaveiro. So it's on the bin Adam L'Makom side to allow you to get into the bin Adam L'Chaveiro side of the Luchos, essentially, is how the Ramban seems to word it. So it's overall a mitzvah of Hakaras HaTov, or that's the general concept that we can see associated with it. Now, that being the case, it's of note that the Gemara has the famous story of Dama ben Sina. It was a non-Jewish person who was approached by the Chachamim, or whoever, the Gizbar, whoever was in charge of collecting funds and necessary materials for the Beis HaMikdash. They needed a stone for the Big Day Kahuna, a very expensive stone. Dama ben Sina dealt with jewels. He was a jeweler, or, you know, some sort of, you know, person, merchant who was familiar with these things and definitely was trading these types of items. They approached him and they were offering a nice sale price for him, and he noticed that the key to the safe, whatever would be comparable to the safe in those days, was under his father's pillow. He did not wake his father up. They offered him an exorbitant sum. He refused. and they went away because he didn't want to wake his father. He was rewarded with a para aduma, you know, down the road next year, which is also an extremely valuable item. So we learn kibbutz ve'aim from him. Now, are goyim chayv in kibbutz ve'aim? It really doesn't have to be. You could say you could learn something if somebody acts in a certain way, regardless of whether they are chayv in it or not. If they did it appropriately, you can learn kibbutz ve'aim from it. However, it would be interesting that the epitome of kibbutz ve'aim that the Gemara seems to find is really a non-Jew. What's more important, perhaps, or somewhat interesting, which is alluded to in last week's parasha already, in Rashi, and Chazal definitely discussed, that Esav possessed this attribute of kibbutz ve'aim. So it's also the parashas that we're dealing with now. So it's of note that the two people who seem to epitomize kibbutz ve'aim are the non-Jews. Yaakov, now Esav may have a din of Yisrael Mum, however you want to address it, but the one who from him did not come the Jewish nation. The one from whom the Jewish nation developed, Yaakov, is the one that we learn that Gadol Talmud Torah mi kibbutz ve'aim. He didn't do kibbutz ve'aim because he had something better to do at the time. So it's interesting because we do have this bridge between Bein Adam L'Makom, Bein Adam L'Chaver, it's one of the Aseres HaDibros. It's something that we're discussing, the Ramban discusses how it epitomizes having Akaras HaTov HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Chinuch repeats that also in the Sefer HaChinuch when he discusses it. It's interesting to see that the two people, or two of the people that are mentioned by Chazal to have this Midah, happen to not be Jewish or not be the founder of the Jewish nation. Even if one would give Esav the halachic status of personally being a Jew, nevertheless from him did not come Jewish people. So, are goyim chayiv in it? It would just be very odd, although not impossible, if they're not. So it's interesting to see that there are those who assume that goyim are in fact chayiv in kibbutz ve'aim. The question is why? There's a Ramah Mipanu who seems to say this, but he seems to have an expanded list of mitzvahs that goyim are chayiv in. That seems to be more than just the seven mitzvahs that we seem attributed to them in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. But we find already Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon wrote a peirush. It's really found somewhat as a hakdama to Shas. It discusses conceptually mitzvahs avodas Hashem. It's a very interesting piece, and one can find it printed in most, if not all, editions of Shas, the Vilna Shas that you know one has. If you open the brachos before it starts, if you try to get through that extremely small print in the beginning of Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, that is this essay essentially that he wrote, which is a really powerful and fantastic hakdama that he wrote. In it, he discusses that humanity is chayiv in mitzvah sichlis, in logical mitzvahs, and kibbutz ve'aim is one of them. It's something that humanity as a whole does. And humanity as a whole is chayiv. Now, what does that mean? If they don't do it, are they chayiv misa? What does it mean to be compelled to keep something that's logical? There's a discussion I think we may have brought up in the past. If we haven't, then I'll bring it up now. There's a discussion of machlokas between the Pnei Yoshua and the Tzlach, and it's in the sixth parak in Brachos. The Gemara determines at one point that brachos are a svar. Why does one have to make a bracha before eating items? So the Gemara comes to a svar. It's a logical thing. You have to thank God, hakaras hatov, hakaras hatov being the exact same svar that we're dealing with now, different manifestation of it, but you have to say thank you before taking something from somebody when he gives it to you. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing us to eat, he's providing us with food, we have to say thank you before partaking of any hana, certainly food, in this world. So it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same idea of kibbutz ve'aim.
don't not require the nusach that we say.
Lav dafka, correct. It would require some sort of thankfulness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It would not be necessarily the nusach. You're correct. So the Pnei Yehoshua, excuse me, takes from this idea that if it's a svara, then midaraisa, you have to make brachas. Now, that doesn't mean that every bracha is a deraisa. We really don't find that being the case. We find benching, if one is full, is a deraisa. Berachas Torah is a deraisa. But we don't really find that brachas in general are deraisa. There are Rishonim who suggest certain brachas being deraisa. And I'm not talking bracha achron, I'm talking about even bracha Rishonim. You can see the rach in the sixth parak of brachas. But that's not a commonly held position amongst Rishonim, and certainly not amongst contemporary poskim, and even non-contemporary poskim, even the early Achronim. So, the Pnei Yehoshua, it may just be that conceptually, maybe once in your life, I'm not sure what it would be, but there has to be some element of Hakaras HaTov that needs to be stated and given to Kadosh Baruch Hu.
We could say the Nusach as opposed to just...
It could be, but then that would be every time. It's so vague and he doesn't clarify really what's going on. There's something that, according to him, is a deraisa, but we don't know exactly what it is. Would it be every time? Would it be the Nusach? Who knows? The Tzlach is not comfortable with this. Because he says, while the Pnei Yehoshua, who does quote from Shas, that sometimes you find that Gemara says, Svara Lamali Kra. If I have a Svara, then I don't need a Pasuk to assert what I'm saying. So the Tzlach says, I understand, Pnei Yehoshua, that Svara Lamali Kra. The Gemara says, if I have a Svara, then I don't need a Pasuk. But I don't find that that means that it's Mechayiv me something new. The Tzlach says, there are two times in Shas that this phrase comes up, Svara Lamalikra. And in both times, we have a concept that already was given, but the application wasn't defined in Shas. Lamashal, you have something and you have to apply it to one of two cases, but you're not sure which one. Okay? Let's say you have a pasuk for whatever reason, or a halacha, and you know it's only applicable in one circumstance, and there are only two theoretical circumstances it could apply to. So which one do you apply to, A or B? And the only thing guiding you is logic. Well, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a Torah to people, and he limited the halachic application of this to one of two cases, I don't want to go into details of the specifics because it's going to get, you know, totally off topic. If it's only supposed to be to one of two cases, and he gave it to humans, and he didn't give us the ability to determine how, based on in a pasuk or writing it directly, which one of the two cases, obviously he wants us to use our logic. Which one makes more sense to apply it to? He gave it to humans to determine which one of these two cases should I apply this halacha to. That's where we find Svar Lovely Krum. It happens to be, and I'm not sure why the Tzlach left it out, there's a... What?
Numerous cases where we use Svar Lovely.
Correct, but there's only twice in Shas as the Tzlach that the actual phrase Svara Lamali Kro is found. Where the Gemara has a pasuk to tell me how to apply something, then the Gemara says Svara Lamali Kro. I have a Svara to apply, I don't need that pasuk, I could use that pasuk for something else. That's only found as the Tzlach twice in Shas. The truth is, I'm not sure why he didn't bring it, there is a third place in Shas where it's brought Nida, but it's the same essential way to use it. So three times in Shas where that Lashon is used, I don't know if he had different gears or whatever it is, but either way, that's how it works.
What's in Yechar of a Baraya?
But I don't have but that's not a new mitzvah. I know I have to adjudicate. There are, the Torah tells me that Dayanim have to adjudicate in different civil cases.
Yeah, but we know.
So if I don't know how to act, I can't use
the, but that's exactly the riot goes on the motzi.
That's fine. That's exactly what the Tzlach is saying. I have a concept that I have to judge these two people. I have to determine to whom the item is supposed to remain in his possession or be taken and given to the other person.
Right.
How do the judges do that? The Chumash doesn't tell me every single possible case. So there's a svara. Man dekoyev lekeva az lebeas is the svara you're talking about, right? Hamotzi mechaber levaraya. So I use svara and I know how to apply the law. I didn't need a pasuk. But that's not a new mitzvah. The mitzvah is to have a civil court system procedures and have judges adjudicate these cases. So they use svara as to how to do that. But it's not a new mitzvah. The Bnei Yehoshua wants to create a new mitzvah that I didn't have a chiyuv before. It's not defining an already existing mitzvah. It's creating a completely new mitzvah. Says the Tzlach, there's no precedent like that, and therefore he has an alternative pshat in the Gemara. So now I come to Rabbi Nisimkum, and he tells me, "Goyim rechayv and kibud avayim." Well, what do I do? Is that kineged the Tzlach? He's telling me that there's something. There's no pasuk that obligates goyim in kibud avayim. It's not down. The only pasuk is the ones that we find by Jews. Yisrael, Eschano. We don't find it by Goyim. Their Shivas Mitzvahs are derived. We find them in Sukkim. But Kibbutz Avim is not one of them. So I have a new mitzvah for Goyim.
Pasuk in Kedoshim, isn't there? There's a pasuk in Kedoshim.
Okay, but that's not for Goyim. How do I have Goyim Chayiv in something that they're not Chayiv in? From a pasuk. From Svara. It must be, it would seem on the surface level, that the Pnei Yehoshua has a good friend in Rabbeinu Nisimkum. And it seems to be a question of the Tzlach, assuming he would, you know, agree with Rabbeinu Nisimkum's assessment. Now, the Tzlach is correct. The three places in Shas that the Lashon of Sura Lam Likra don't indicate the Pnei Yehoshua's concept, at the same point in time, it doesn't mean that it's not true, theoretically. It just happens to not be found in Shas with that application. The Tzlach has another question, though. And that is, if Svara is mechayiv of me, then what do I need certain pesukim for? Svara lamli kra. Why do I need a pasuk about murder? Why do I need a pasuk about stealing? Why do I need all these pesukim that are what we would call mitzvah sichlius, logical, normative laws that every society comes up with, whether they be on the books, or just a hanhaga that's expected of society? There's no law that I am familiar with, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm assuming we can ask, it's probable, I may be wrong in this, but it's probable that there's no law on the books in the United States of America that one has to be mechabed aviv v'imo. But I think that if you ask anybody in the street, if you're not doing that, they'll look at you that you're doing something immoral. How could you not have a karas hatov? Now, there may be exceptions to this rule in the mitzvah sichlius department, which you need to address. The father is abusive, if, you know, something happens subsequent. But assuming it's a normal, or I shouldn't say normal, but non-dysfunctional relationship between a father and a son, so then, presumably, you know, most people, I think, would say, if the son doesn't treat the father with respect, he's doing something immoral. So society, maybe not legally, but it has a certain necessity or requirement of kibud av v'eim that is expected, has expectations. We find, so if that's mechayiv me as a mitzvah, like the Pnei Yehoshua and Rabbeinu Nisimkum seem to indicate, then what do I need pesukim for? Rabbeinu Bechaya seems to say a similar concept. He's not applying it to Kibbutz Avim, but he does discuss mitzvah sichlius. He says, when discussing stone and it's being overturned, so he cites different midrashim, which quote psukim, to discuss that they were really horrible people, and one of the worst things, if not the worst thing, that really sealed their fate was that they hated tzedakah. They hated doing good charitable acts to other people. They even punished people who would try to give tzedakah and help those less fortunate. And he says, you know, citing from these midrashim, he says, well, essentially, what's so bad? I'm paraphrasing here. Goyim are not chayiv in tzedakah. They're not chayiv to allow people to give tzedakah. What's going on?
There's a notion of being charitable.
That's fine. It's moral. But we're talking about mitzvahs. Now, he doesn't mention this, but I'll mention this. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra that discusses tzedakah specifically, that for Goyim, it's a tremendous chus for them. It's a tremendous chus for Goyim to give tzedakah, both Jews and Goyim. It's sugars if they're discussing tzedakah. So it's a zchus. Presumably, we generally would equate that with some sort of mitzvah. What's going on? So the Ben-Chai does say, he says, mitzvah sichlius, things that every society, it's normal in those societies, it's what societies develop. It's almost unheard of to have a society that doesn't work by certain laws. Certain laws are the laws of human nature. And some of them are things that are deemed moral and immoral if you go against them. One of those is kibud avim. Another is tzedakah. Every society, for the most part, with the exception of Stone, and maybe there have been other exceptions, but they're the exception, they're certainly not the rule, values tzedakah. Is it a chiyuv? I don't know. Depends on how you, in America, depends on how you view certain taxation to provide for people less fortunate. Maybe you will say it is a chiyuv. I don't know.
The smart against tzedakah basically is, well, because that you're poor is obviously God's punishing you and I have no responsibility to help you. That's usually the smart against tzedakah.
That's what Jonas Rufus said to Rabbi Akiva, which is something that, even though it's an argument against tzedakah, perhaps that individuals have had, or maybe individual societies have had throughout history, but the overwhelming majority of human societies that we have are familiar with have valued tzedakah to a degree. You can find it in almost any literature of almost any culture. So yes, there are those who don't like it, but those are the exception, they're not the rule. At least that's what Rabbeinu Bachai is asserting. I will concede, I haven't done any scientific studies about this, so I could be wrong. But that's what he suggests. Once again, if you'll find people, correct, but overwhelming, it just seems unnatural. Rabbeinu Bachai certainly assumed this. And therefore, he says, therefore, it's a chiv, and they were punished for it. That's what they were punished for. So we see again, seemingly mimicking and echoing what Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon stated, which seems to support off the bat the Pnei Yoshua, and seems to be a little counter to Tzlach. So the reason why I think it's not a proof to the Pnei Yoshua and the Tzlach can agree, I don't think it's Machria, is because Rabbeinu Bachai added in a point that I don't think that Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon necessarily disagrees with. He said, Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon just says it's mitzvah sichlius, things that are logical and human essentially, are imperative. But Rabbeinu Bachai says, and every society does them. He adds that part in. I think that's a key point. Because it's being human. It's not a chiv, per se. There's a difference between something that you're obligated to do and something that you're commanded to do. They're two very different things. One, you're obligated to do because you need to. It could be a prerequisite. Hashem commanded me to sit in a sukkah on sukkahs. I'm obligated to build a sukkah. But that's not the mitzvah. We can deal with this with Avnei Nezer. But in the pasha understanding, the mitzvah is to sit in the sukkah, not to build the sukkah. So, I'm obligated to build it because I'm going to need to do it. Now, that's a hechsher mitzvah, you'll say. But either way, you'll see there's a difference between an obligation and a commandment. If I act in a way that is different than the rest of humanity, essentially, I'm parish min hatzibur. In this case, it means I'm saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, effectively, I'm not human. Now, Hashem has designated a certain fate for humanity. He wants all of humanity in His service to do good for them. If somebody says he's not going to be part of that, then he's choosing not to be part of that. And therefore, he will not be zoche to what they get, and he's not human, so he doesn't deserve to be around anymore, because he's acting anti-human. He's going against what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. It's not what Hashem wants. It's not in the spirit of the law. It's not in the spirit of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world for. You know it's wrong, even if you found a loophole in technicality, why there's nothing on the books that says it's wrong. Because it's just wrong. All of humanity knows that it's wrong to be against tzedakah. Does every single individual really have to give tzedakah? Presumably not. As long as each society tries to take care of its, you know, good. But if somebody neglects giving tzedakah when other people need it, always? Forget about Jews who have a chiv, a mitzvah to do it, where there's an actual commandment, that's another thing. Here, it's an obligation independent of the commandment. Once you have a commandment, besides your obligation to just be human, now you're commanded to do certain things. Because those have other repercussions. Now it's a mitzvah samelech as opposed to just the definition of being human or being Jewish or whatever it is. Now there are mitzvahs that you need to do. So that, if that's the difference, is a tremendous difference. You won't find a new mitzvah according to the tzlach based on the svar. But you may find certain things which are obligatory. So the tzlach may have agreed to the Bnei Yehoshua based on Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon and Rabbeinu Bechaya, that one would be obligated to show Akar Satov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he would have held that it's not a mitzvah. You're not commanded to do it. It's just something that if you don't do it, you're displaying that you're not acting like a regular human. You're taking yourself out of normative human behavior, which means you're more like a behemoth. In which case, that's how the person will get treated.
So according to the tzlach, the Rambam shouldn't count kibbutz behemoth?
He does, because there is a pasuk. If there was no pasuk, then it should not have been counted. There is a pasuk, so it's counted. Now that there's a pasuk, there's a tzivui.
What necessitates the pasuk?
God decided.
What necessitated? I mean, it's not, nothing necessitates.
There was nothing that God needed to. There would have been an obligation without the pasuk. Now there's a pasuk. There's a mitzvah. There's a commandment, not just an obligation. It's more than just an obligation. Now there's an actual commandment that God said you must do it, besides your inherent obligation, just to be human.
So what did God add? More detail?
Then now it's the service of God. It's not just saying I'm part of the human race. It's saying now I'm serving God by doing this. By the Goyim, it's only a Karas HaTov, but there's no mitzvah. By us, there's a mitzvah also. It's also serving God. A Goy can get an appreciation for HaKadosh Baruch Hu by doing it. He can take the lessons from it. But he's not doing mitzvah samelach. He's just doing what he needs to do to act like a human in this situation. So that's kibbutz avim, which is why now, when we do separate it, you have an overall concept, which is a display of hakaras hatov, but you also have a mitzvah samelach, which may mean that sometimes, even though no hakaras hatov is necessary, still, it's going to be a mitzvah. And we'll get the cases, perhaps, that, you know, display that idea of it. So when we want to show the lessons to be learned from it, which are more overall, the Hakaras HaTov, which is what the Chinuch says in the Ramban, besides just the Mitzvah Samelech part of it, but we want to show some of the ideas that we can learn from it and better ourselves, besides just doing a mitzvah, but what other morals can we incorporate into our soul by, you know, taking certain midas of Hakaras HaTov, it's even better if we take Goyim as the examples. Because they're doing it specifically for the Hakaras HaTov. Mitzvah Samelech we have on all of our mitzvahs. When they're logical or illogical. But the logical component of it is something that you can apply not just to keep it of the aim, but to many other aspects of having Hakaras HaTov to many other people. And therefore, if we specifically pick people who are not associated with the Jewish nation, we're specifically looking at those ideas. That's what I think perhaps helps us why the sum of the notable examples that Chazal chose are not people who are either Jewish or the Jewish nation came from. Now, what's interesting is that it's not always the case that it's a mitzvah sechlius. A person's grandfather. So there's a debate whether or not there's a mitzvah of kibbutz avim. The Rama brings two opinions. The Rama ends up saying that there is a chiyuv of kibbutz avim to a grandfather, but the father takes precedence over the grandfather. So if there's ever a conflict, the father comes before the grandfather. Okay? Now, if you have a situation where a person's grandfather raised him, now, the father directly is the reason why the son is alive. But if not for the grandfather, the son wouldn't be alive either. So they've both contributed physically why he's alive. And the grandfather added the component also of the raising and clothing and all that other stuff. So I think that many people in society would assume that if I had to choose between one over the other, in the scenario I just gave you, the grandfather would take precedence. But the halacha is the father takes precedence. It's just the din. As we have said, halachas.
He's still the one who brought him into the world.
Right, but the grandfather is the one who brought him into the world.
Well, not physically.
So, let's go back to that pasuk for a second that we mentioned. That Yaakov shechted karbanos, he brought karbanos for his, in the name of his father's God, Yitzchak's God. And it doesn't say Avram's God. So, the Rashi brings that pasuk, and the Ramban asks some questions on Rashi, and he says, one of the concerns is that we could have used earlier references to display this idea. Why are we waiting till this point? He doesn't bring the one from our parsha, interestingly enough. So the Livyas Chaim comes to answer the Ramban, and he says that there's a very big difference. In earlier parts, when Abraham was still alive, so there's generally a rule that, let's say a person's father and mother ask him to do something, and there's a conflict. The father asks him to do one thing, and the mother asks another. You can't do both. Which one do you do? So, based on the din from Shas, since the mother has a chiyuv of kibbutz to the father, there's a whole big question whether that applies today, nowadays, with the contemporary society, but back then it certainly did. So she has a chiyuv of kavod to the father, and he has a chiyuv to both, but since she is somewhat necessary, required to give the father kibbutz also, so the father takes precedence. Because both the son and the mother are chayv and kavod to the father, and therefore when there's a conflict, you have to take his approach. However, in a situation where the parents are divorced, so she no longer has a chiv of kavod to the father, it's not the case. The son has to choose. He's allowed to choose whichever he wants to do. So, you see that if two people have something, a request, you go, if one of them, two out of three parties are chayv and kavod to, you go with that party. Now, if you have a grandfather and a father, the father is chayv and kavod to the grandfather. So the Livyas Chaim says, so long as Avraham was still alive and Yitzchak was chayv and kavod to Avraham, so you should say, Avraham. Once Yitzchak was dead, so Yitzchak's no longer chayv and kavod to Avraham anymore, because he's passed away, so he's chavshi min ha-mitzvos. So the Yitzchak says, it's only at that point in time, in Parshas Vayigash, after Yitzchak had passed away, that you could say that the father's kavod comes before the grandfather's kavod. Because it's not that Yitzchak was chayv to Avraham anymore, because Yitzchak has passed away. So Yaakov chose his father, but the pasuk chose, you know, the father, or Yaakov did l'shem his father's God, to because his grandfather and father had passed away, so he had more kibbutz av on the father of the grandfather. So Livyas Chaim is definitely applying this idea of they're both chayv and kavod. Okay, he applies it that way. Now, Lamaisa, if I look at the Ramah, he doesn't seem to go with this idea. And he seems to say unequivocally that you always take the father over the grandfather. Why is that? That's the halacha. Kibbutz primarily goes to the father. And even though you're right, there's a svara why it should go to the grandfather, the chiv of kibbutz to the grandfather is only hakar satov, perhaps, whereas to the father is a mitzvah. This, to the grandfather might not be technically kibbutz ein. Whereas to the father is technically kibbutz of aim, it's both a mitzvah and an obligation. There's only an obligation perhaps to the grandfather, and that's why, so once again, we do find conflict between svara and mitzvah sometimes, and when that happens, mitzvah takes precedence for us. For people who are only going with svara, then svara would always take precedence. Now, going back for a second to what we started with, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosem Yikibud Avayim. Why is that? And is that really? Well, the halacha is brought down in Shulchan Aruch.
What about that line people always hear? Derech Eretz Kadmo Torah.
Derech Eretz is Kadmo Torah. That's true. But you need. I mean, if a person is not going to listen to their parents because of Talmud Torah, he needs to do it with Derech Eretz. It's not a hetzer to be chutzpahdik. He just doesn't have to listen. But he has to not listen in a respectful fashion. So the cases are the Trumas of Dashanah's cases, but you know also in Shulchan Aruch, some Rishmam and Yehudeya, that a person wants to go learn away from home, and the parent says, no way, I don't want you going, that the son does not have a responsibility to listen to the parent in that case. Which is essentially what happened to Yaakov. Yaakov went to Shem Be'Ever, and instead of going home to serve his father, he stayed and learned Torah. Now, does that mean that I'm learning, and my father comes up and he says, go get me a glass of water. Sorry. I'm learning. Not getting you a glass of water. Get it yourself. Is that what that means? So, we find that that's not the case. Basically, Tshuva mentions that that's not the case. And we pass on that that's not the case. A person has to, we find the case of Gemara, Vimi, he used to bedakta do kibud av eim. He was ma'asik, presumably from some learning, you know, to do it. There's two types of Talmud Torah. There's Talmud Torah when I'm learning, and then there's a global, more kvalistic Talmud Torah. My choice to go to yeshiva out of town is because my experience in yeshiva over a long period of time, I will develop skills, Torah skills, and skills for my neshama that will build me up, that will create a newer person, so to speak, or create a newer understanding. That takes precedence over kibud av eim. But right now, to take a 5-minute break, it's like any other mitzvah that you deal with. If a person's learning, then and another mitzvah comes, so he's oseik b'mitzvah right now, so it all depends. If the mitzvah that came right now can be done by somebody else, then we can achieve both. I can learn, the other mitzvah can be accomplished by somebody else, there's no reason to stop. But if I'm the only one who can accomplish the other mitzvah, then I have to stop my learning, and I'll take care of it. The same goes with kibud av eim. So, what's going on though, is for me to go to another location, that's a totally different parsha. That's what we see from Yaakov. We don't see just learning, you know, taking a 5-minute break in the middle of a Seder. That, we would say, gadol, kibud av eim, yoser, mitalmud Torah in such a situation. It's only this global where you're changing the whole person, a whole new situation to be able to learn, a new environment to be able to learn in. Which makes sense when you think about it. I mean, Yaakov, what's going on with him? He couldn't learn at home? Did he not have the capabilities? Yitzchak wasn't a good teacher? The Rambam seems to record that Yitzchak was his rabbi. I assume he learned, you know, when we're dealing with these things. So, why did he go home? For whatever reason, it was necessary. There were skills and a perspective of Torah that Yaakov was able to achieve in the base measures of Shein Ve'Aver, presumably under Aver, that he was not going to get from Yitzchak. I think it's of note that Yaakov is the Av that we generally associate going through Galus. So, and then succeeding in it. We talked about that on Shabbos a little bit. So for him to be able to learn Torah in an environment from people who are not associated with those who became Yisrael, they are tremendous Nevi'im perhaps, and Lomdei Torah, but their perspective is certainly greater. He can glean a perspective of the world from an outsider's view of Yisrael as well as from the insider's view. So there are certain things about his Torah learning that he perhaps was able to achieve in the base measures of Eber that he was unable to achieve in the base measures of Yitzchak. It's of note, when Rivka had her issues and she went to a Navi, we're taught she went to Eber, Shem Be'Eber, Eber, she didn't go to Avram, who was still alive. And her husband, I guess, also either, he's in the dark about all these things. Right? He doesn't know that Esau's trying to kill Yaakov. He doesn't know that, you know, Esav isn't supposed to get the bracha. Only Rivka knows that. He doesn't seem to be told that one's going to be, you know, a great nation, the Rav Yavatzar. If Rav Yavatzar, the Mayan Sufi is going to try to give a bracha to the Rav, not to be Ovid Tzar. Was he trying to go against the prophecy? Maybe, I don't know. But it seems that Aver, from an objective opinion, needed to kind of step in things that on the inside they weren't going to see. And all these things, for whatever reason, are pertinent to Yaakov. So Yaakov needed to learn by Aver things that he presumably was not going to get from Yitzchak. Why is it Gadol? We see from Yaakov it was Gadol. He didn't go back home where he could have done Kippud Avim and learned Torah. But this other element of learning Torah in a different location obviously took precedence over that. Why? Why is that? So perhaps, obviously we see from Yaakov is the case, but it's somewhat of a svara. And that is that the mitzvah samelach, as we see, is to have an appreciation for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to be able to produce for HaKadosh Baruch Hu what He wants of you. That is by knowledge of the Torah and what it's asking of you. So for your development, which is sounds selfish, but in truth, it's a development of the spiritual self, for you to be able to achieve that in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu appropriately makes more sense than somewhere where you're only going to have respect for the Father without really respecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to develop to your spiritual capabilities, and this will give you a whole new perspective to be able to understand the Torah in its entirety and the way it relates to you. So that's perhaps why Gadol Talmud Torah.
Why would it be Kippud Av for him not to go back?
It was a lack of Kippud Av. I mean, he could have gone back.
Why? His father said that he had to come back?
Well, there was no reason for him to stay. So he could have achieved Kippud Av Aim by going back to Yitzchak and left there also.
But he wasn't over Kippud Av Aim by staying.
So the way Chazal say it is that he lost out the opportunities of doing Kippud Av Aim during all those 14 years.
So when somebody moves away, they have an obligation to move back to their parents?
Unless there's something. If their parents need them, which, keep in mind, Yitzchak was blind at the time. So if the parents need them, or are going to want them...
But Esav was there, the epitome of Kippud Av.
I thought he had to go to Padan Aram.
Well, he didn't do Kippud Av Aim both when he delayed in coming back, for which he was punished, and for when he was learning. Correct. There's a duration of time that we see, when you just do the math, of how many years he was gone, that's unaccounted for, that Chazal tells us he was learning the base measure of Shem Be'Aver. That he's not seen punished for his lack of Kippud Av Aim, whereas the other ones, it seems that it was expected of him to be able to attend to his father. Now, once again, it could be that Yitzchak was blind and needed help around the house, or it could just be that he could have done this mitzvah in addition to all the other mitzvahs that he was doing, so why would he run away from the mitzvah? Now, just we'll try to finish off now with one other element of Kippud Av Aim, and that is, what is the mitzvah exactly? As we're talking about Zachar Satov, if a father tells the son to do something, is the Kibbutz of Aim giving the Hanah to the father? Or is the Kibbutz of Aim doing the action itself? What is the mitzvah? Is my father says, bring me a cup of water. Is my bringing him the cup of water, that itself is the mitzvah? While I'm bringing the water, I'm doing the mitzvah. Or is the mitzvah, when he gets it, he gets a geschmack, that he has his water now? Which of the two? What's the nafkamina? So, there's two ways to read. There's a Rashi in Yevamos that's discussing Aseh Dokalos Aseh. And we have a case where the pasuk tells me that somebody does not listen to his father if the father is telling him to do an Aveira. Now, Rashi says one of the cases is the father tells his son, who's a Kohen, not to get a lost object to get a lost object, but the lost object is in the cemetery. Okay? So there's something lost. A Kohen normally doesn't enter the cemetery to get that lost object. The father's telling him, go and get it. So you have Kippud Av Aim to get the lost object, because the father is saying, go do that. The son is a Kohen, so he can't go in to the cemetery because he's a Kohen, right? So therefore, he doesn't listen to the father in this scenario. That's the case Rashi brings. The Ritva understands that actually going in is a standard case, exactly how I just presented to you. The father tells the son, there's a lost object out there, go get it. And the son is not supposed to listen, even though that he would be being mekayim, kibud av aim, by getting the lost object from there. The Meiri has a different spin on this, and he adds in one little point to Rashi's storyline, and that is that it's the father's object that he had lost. Now, the way Rashi, we have it, doesn't seem to indicate this, and the Ritva, when he expresses Rashi, it seems to be a mitzvah hashavas aveda. It's not that the father lost something and then he sees it in the seminar and says, oh, there it is, can you get it for me? No. It's a case where he says, oh, look, somebody must have dropped that item over there, go get it for him. That's how the Ritva seems to say. But the Meiri has it that the father lost something, it got blown into the cemetery, whatever it is, kicked around, it's in the cemetery now. If the son's going, the father's going too. The father doesn't want to go in to get it. So he says to his son, no, go get me the thing. So you would have thought that he's supposed to get it. You don't listen to your father. But now, so the Meiri says, because that's a heksher. Now, it's why did he have to make it his? It's the heksher of the mitzvah is really to be mahana, the father. Which is it? Is the mitzvah the hanah that the father gets, the result of your action is the mitzvah, or is the action itself the mitzvah? And that seems to be what this machlokas Meiri and Ritva is. Now, we have over here a situation which it sounds like, although I don't know definitively, that we seem to pass in like this Meiri. I will say there is a Piskei Tosfos in Zvachim that seems to have the same perspective as the Meiri. But we have a situation that the Ruma says that he's going in the Mechaber. The Mechaber tells us that the person has to do it with a smile. He has to do the mitzvah with a smile. And if he does the mitzvah itself, but in a way that it upsets the father, then even though he gave him the glass of water, in my example, he didn't do kibud av aim. In fact, he did the antithesis of kibud av aim. Now, that doesn't tell me Ritva or Meiri one way or another, because either way, it's an action that would bring about hanah. This one is bringing about, essentially, a slap in the face of the father. But then the Rama says that the opposite is true also. The opposite case is a case where the father needs to do something that he doesn't want to do. So, the case that Rama brings is that something not good is going to happen to the father unless the son is able to convince the father to work hard, do some manual labor, grinding something in the Rechaim, in a grinder. So he says the son, even though the father doesn't want to do it, the son has a responsibility, in a very nice way, to convince his father to start grinding and doing this menial labor, even though the father doesn't want to, he thinks he's getting degraded, but really it's a kiyum of kibud av aim. That seems to be very Meiri and Piskei Tshuva-like. Piskei Tosfos-like. In that it's the father's not enjoying it, but it's really the outcome is the hanah to the father, the tzotzah, in the end of the day. It may have some ramifications also. Let's say a father tells his son, go get me my cigarettes. So the son knows it's not good for the father. And the father wants his cigarettes for right now. So, not getting into whether smoking is mutter or asr, let's assume just for the purposes of kibud av aim example right now that it's mutter, and I'm not saying that halach l'maisa, but if we were to assume that, then can the son get the cigarettes for the father? He knows that the smoking is going to kill him. So what does he do? So it seems that the greater outcome of not smoking and having a healthier life overall, even though it comes with withdrawal symptoms and whatever else that the father definitely does not want at this moment, would seem to outweigh, the go get me the cigarettes right now. In this sense, it seems to be really speaking very similar to what the Rama is bringing of the case of the Reichaim, which is based on a different Rashi in Kedushin. So it's not so clear. I'm not going to say it is, but it would seem to me in such a case that the son should respectfully, he cannot say it, you know, incorrectly, but he has to decline in such a situation from getting the parent the cigarettes. These are very, you know, easy examples somewhat to give. More get to when the father's asking something and the son realizes that what the father wants to achieve is not going to be achieved. And in fact, by the son participating in what the father wants, it'll make things worse in the situation or whatever it is. The father has an end goal that he wants to reach, and the son realizes that this is going to be counterproductive if he does what the father asks him.
Is it a gambling problem?
It could be any of these things. You know, it could be a family situation where the father wants the son to, you know, try to make things better, but the father doesn't realize that the other party is really not going to comply, and no matter what the son's going to do, the other party's just going to make things worse. So at one point, the son has a chiv, because of kibud av aim, to say to the father, I'm sorry, I just can't do this, because it's just going to make the family situation worse. And then the son says, I'm sorry. And the son, you know, the father will say, you're not doing kibud av aim. But the son knows he really is, because it's a worse situation if he doesn't. It's a lose-lose situation, but klapei shmaya, it's a win, at least for the son. And hopefully for the father, somehow. All right, that in a nutshell is certain aspects of kibud av aim. As I said, I mean, we touched upon, I think, 2 se'ifim total from Shulchan Aruch tonight out of 25. And besides the 25 actual se'ifim in Shulchan Aruch, which does not sound all that long, certain things are much longer than 25 se'ifim, there's a lot to get into, especially with modern-day application. Most year, I think, that discuss kibud av aim, discuss, you know, parents once, you know, caring for parents and addressing their needs, and like you were mentioning before, children who've moved away, their responsibilities to parents who live in other areas, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. They do get complicated, and you know, it's kibud av aim is not an easy mitzvah. In many regards, and in some regards, it's the easiest mitzvah. It just depends on the application. You know, there are 2 mitzvahs that the Torah says explicitly that a person gets long life for: Shiluch HaKein and Kibud Av Aim. And Shiluch HaKein is considered to be an easy mitzvah, and Kibud Av Aim is considered to be a difficult mitzvah. And you know, it's showing you that, you know, easy, hard, whatever it is, it's all mitzvahs HaMelech, which we've mentioned tonight. We have that added element, at least on Kibud Av Aim, of being Mitzvah Samelch, in addition to Mitzvah Sichlius, or Obligation Sichlius, as we were determining it before. And, you know, it's an Erichas Yom, but it's definitely considered a difficult mitzvah because it can be a conflict and can be very difficult on a person's lifestyle, you know, especially when dealing with parents who have a lot of needs, which can seriously be difficult for certain people. Other people, you know, Baruch Hashem, they say, you know, Baruch Hashem, it's my parent, and I have the abilities to do this, and we're going to do this to the best as we can. The biggest thing is that the goal is to achieve what's in the best interest for the father or mother, and it's to be done always with respect, and even if it's counter to what they're directly saying, if it's truly in their best interest, as we saw, it's what's necessary to be done, and those are the situations where it's sometimes even more difficult to do it respectfully, because and that happens oftentimes with older parents also. They want to do certain things. Let's say, just another example, the parent wants to continue driving, but the child knows that their past and age where driving is safe for that parent. These are difficult things that need to be navigated with tremendous sensitivity. Baruch Hashem, in most cases, children recognize that they have to have sensitivity because they love their parents. So, you know, that works that way, but it's a difficult mitzvah, as Chazal tells us.